This is a taped interview with Mrs. Louise Troll at 5028 East B, Tacoma, Washington. This was done on February 3rd, 1976 by Ruth L. Wett, Tacoma Public Library. This is a tape original. Can we start again by getting your full name and where you were born?
Well, my name is Louise Troll. I was born in Intervena suburb of Seattle, community, railroad community, mostly. My father was Thomas Grant, who was an engineer for the Great Northern. And all I can remember is just railroad. Engines, train, his brother, Lawrence Grant, was an engineer. His other brother, his older brother, an engineer on a different division, his name was Dave. My own brother, named after one of my uncles, Lawrence Grant, was an engineer. His son, Tom Grant, is an engineer. I married an engineer, Howard Troll. His father was an engineer before him. So this is all I have memories of. It's just, I don't know anything else but railroad. And living in a community there, as we did, there were railroad people all about us. Transportation working was easy, and they had to live close to the roundabout where the work was, so that they could walk to the town. My brother and I, the one that I mentioned, that is the engineer now, we spent a great deal of time in the railroad yards, against my mother's wishes, of course. Climbing through boxcar for which we did have, which was an effort, you know, but we were very cautious. Playing around the roundhouse, riding the turntable, riding the locomotives. At that time, my father and his brother were on passenger run. First it was the Oriental Limited and then the Empire Building. And they were on opposite runs. In other words, when one was going out, the other was coming in. They had to go from Intervay down to King Street to get their coaches. So we would ride down the waterfront, get off one engine, and on the other, ride back home again. And we did this quite a little bit. Those days, they weren't quite as strict, away with things of that nature. But nowadays, that would be just out, and officials, and well, I suppose it's because of injuries, for example, they were hurt naturally, just like riding a truck or anything else. No riders, no. Mm-hmm. But we were kids, so we got to remove it. And my mother and dad met at the east portal of the first Cascade Tunnel, where my grandmother had a boarding house. And this is where I met. She was just a very young girl. And they lived in the little railroad town of Leavenworth after they married. Then moved on to CI. Of course, my father's railroading goes back to the turn of the century, where he had plied all three routes over the Cascade Mountains, the old switchback, which, unless you know where to look, you can't see it. It's almost obliterated now with growth, but you still can see the stars if you know where to look. Mm-hmm. The tracks that went up the side and then they switched back and forth. And then, of course, the first Cascade Tunnel, and then the second one, which is, of course, you know, was the longest bore in the Western Hemisphere. Mm-hmm. And I've ridden through that tunnel on the, what they put motors on, electric motors. That tunnel, they built a big one on a ton of the gas booms, and then they couldn't use anything else. But I've ridden through there. And it is quite a, funny sensation to see that. It's quite straight, the tunnel is. So that pretty soon you go along and you just see a little pinpoint of the dot. And it just opens up and opens up and opens up, just like a lot of light getting brighter and brighter, of course, at the end there. But it was quite an experience to ride through there. I've done it many times. We used to get on the engine that's back home, see if everything looked right, and ride through to the other side. And ridden through the old raft or the old tumble down snow shed there up around Chai. And of course that has been named Chai after the Wellington disaster, that was one of the Northwest catastrophes. I'm not sure you have read anything about that. My husband's father was on a work train detail putting that up, and he remembers it so distinctly because they lived up there at the time in a little shack, just temporary quarters, and he was with his dad every day, riding around up there, cleaning up all the debris and fixing the tracks and the slides. But those little snow sheds are just going down, so there's not much left of them now. But as you leave Tai and go back around the mountain, there is another tunnel back in there. It's called the Horseshoe Tunnel and the Horseshoe Bridge. It isn't at all, you can't see it from the Stevens Pass Highway where you can see the ocean, but you wind around the back side of the mountain and go through into this old horseshoe tunnel. And as children, I can remember riding in the coaches in the back, and as they made this big horseshoe turn, while we could see Dad, and he waved back at us in the, you come around like that, where you were almost across from one another, you know. Those are just some of the memories I have, early day memories. And of course, when my father retired, I was relieved. I thought, well, we don't have to worry about slides. We don't have to worry about why he's late. He's home. So what do I do? But there you go, Mr. Engineer. Go through the same thing all over again. With, wondering what time he's going to get home. I mean, he'll be home for dinner or not, you never knew. If you invite guests for dinner, why, he'd never be here. If you leave the house and go somewhere, that's when he'd come home. Christmas and holidays, Thanksgiving, all of the 4th of July's, anything that might come up. Never home. And if the emergency arose, the kids would get sick, and maybe a tragedy in the family somewhere, it was never home. You had to just go on your own. Something broke down in the house, you had to fix it. He'd be away sometimes when they're battling the seniority there to get to the top, why they would call him an extra list, where they'd come in off the job, they'd be so many times out, and you'd have to sit by the phone and wait for your turn. And if they missed a call, you went down to the bottom of the again and started all over again. And that's not very good when you're raising a family and trying to make a living. And of course, in those days, why none of their expenses were paid, this was what people used to think nowadays, you know, good money. You didn't take into consideration that they had to pay for their own meals and their hotel rooms on the town. And that had to be quite an experience. And you know they weren't reimbursing in any way. I believe they are now, since my husband is retired. They provide motel rooms for them, and they give them so much for their meals. So this has been a big boom.
Could we go over, you were talking about the men having to pay their own way when they were out on the road.
This is true. They had to pay their own food and board away from home, and you never knew how long they'd be away from home. You never keep some extra cash on hand when they left the house, because you never knew, as I say, when they were going, where they were going to be, what town they'd be in, and how long they'd be there. There were times when my husband spent entire summers away from home, and the children were small and in school. We had just one car. I would drive down to Oakland and Tacoma in the morning, get back and try to get the kids off to school. He'd be down on a method of transportation, just go to work and go back to the hotel room, and go to work and go back to very dull. And I would sit here, very dull. I think I have talked about the holiday time. And there's just no way of planning any social life whatsoever. However, I became accustomed to that, where a lot of people couldn't. That's all I'd ever known anyway. Never could be assured that we could go someplace until vacation time, unless he held a regular job, and by that I mean that you have to have a lot of seniority to hold a regular passenger job where you go out at a certain time and come back at a certain time. But in freight service, the time he worked, it was a 16-hour law. So if they, what they called, died on the road, when the 16 hours was up, they quit. Well, then he had to get home. So he'd be on the road for hours and hours, but I never knew when. There were a lot of dinners kept warm, set aside, or the neighbors used to remark that there was light on in this house all night. Gee, you got up early this morning. I said, no, we just got to bed late. I wasn't cooking breakfast, I was cooking dinner. Maybe it was 3 o'clock in the morning, but it might be the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
You just never knew. Some people, you couldn't cope with that. It has caused dissension in some families. But if it came right down to it, we had to wind the clock every night, put the cat out at the same time, go to bed every night at the same time, and follow a routine, I don't think I could adjust to that, because I had never known that. It was always that feeling of anticipation, well, gee, maybe he will be home.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder where he's going to go this time. Nothing was the same. We never could, there was no set routine, and certainly no monotony. Of getting up at the same time and eating breakfast at the same time and eating lunch at the same time. And only any amount of routine that we had, of course, was when the children were in school, as far as we were concerned, but I'd work around that, be up very late, call sitting on. And when I first went to work, why, there were no vacations. You see, we got a week. Now that's filled up to 5 weeks. Then began the 16-hour law that I mentioned. It's now down to 12. So there have been some improvements, and as far as the companies taking care of their people, I think they did a pretty good job. Perhaps I shouldn't bring this into it, but of course they've had their little brother, that's where I think there's where they've made their strides in bargaining with the companies, like in all places,
mm-hmm.
and getting their vacations and getting their benefits now as far as medical,
mm-hmm.
this type of thing.
Was there any need to strike that you remember to get what they felt they deserved?
Well, of course, my husband and I are naturally unbiased. I can see why they would. This is one thing they never allowed, it seemed like, railroad people to strike. They'd always call a 60-day cooling off period or a 30-day cooling off period, and it was a terrible sin for them to strike. But other people do it, airlines and buses, and they get away with it and get what they wanted over the bargaining table. But railroad people, somehow, they were just...
sort of like nurses and doctors.
They just couldn't. They just would not let them, and they were all wrong, you know, if they did such a thing. But I feel as if, of course, with their unions and all, this is why they have some of the things they have now. Better safety conditions. Now they are paid. Well, I shouldn't say paid. Their rooms are furnished when they're away from home.
Mm-hmm.
And they usually furnish them with very nice quarters and motel, and there's so much allowance for their meals. And this is some of the benefits that they have reaped through long, long strides. This has been way, way, way back. Why, it was nothing, but it's just part of everything now. Everyone expects this type of thing in most places they work. They have sick leaves and so on and so forth in other places. Fellows get their benefits now too. So things aren't quite as difficult as they were in the earlier days. Except I do believe there's more and more pressure put on women now. I feel as if there's not quite as much love for their jobs as there used to be in years gone by. That feeling of loyalty to their job, and I have a sense of that. And whether it's because the trains have become so terrifically long, so many units and so much for them to look after. I don't know just what it might be, but it's just a little bit, railroading hasn't the glamour, I don't feel, right now that it used to have. It just always is something apart. And of course, railroad people have been a very closely knit people because of the fact that they have stayed in one spot. I'm speaking from the operating part of it, where, like the engineman and the trainman, where their seniority would clean everything, and they would live in one community for a long while and work at their jobs, like I say, 30, 40, 50 years. And naturally, you're going to be with these people and associate, and your social life revolves around all these people, because they have this in common with you. They know what you're up against, and what your plans are, and what your plans aren't, and what you can do with them. So you don't have to apologize if you can't make a certain situation, because they understand. There has been women's auxiliaries, and years ago, there was a lot of social life around that. That has dropped somewhat, I do believe. There isn't quite as, but that was a big thing, and the railroad picnics and that type of thing. It kind of seems like we have too much of it. Well, I think one thing is our modern method of transportation, too. The railroad people did live in one community, basically because they had walked to work and communications, the telephones, and so forth. But now people think nothing of driving 30 miles to go to work because of the automobile. So they move out into better neighborhoods and away from the railroads, and they don't all just cling around the roundhouse anymore, or as it used to be. And there's a lot of worries about them being gone, and they think they should be home, and they're not home, and you watch the clock, and you don't sleep, and you think of gasoline trucks on the crossings where they might no way to stop. Those big long trains, they can't stop them right now. Smashing into those, making an inferno out of the cab. It just been a lot of worry. And when they retire, you're glad in a way. You feel relieved. You don't have to worry about it. And then there's a retirement being lost all the way, fortunately. So I don't know what to say, except that it has been, it was a good life. I wouldn't have had it any other way. And that's all I know about, is being involved with railroad and railroad people. And they do stick together. When there's any problem, why, they're there, and they help you out. And after things are over with, such as my case here, I still see them. They just don't drop you. You're still with them. So they're a great group of people, and as far as railroading and coping with all these things I've talked about, it's all been fun in a sense. It's been a good life and a secure one.
Savoy, the home of sweet romance. Savoy, it wins you at a glance. Savoy gives happy feet a change to dance. Your lips are warm and soft as wine. Your eyes bet blind to mine. Your lips so divine to me, to me. How my heart is swimming while the hand is playing, never tired of romping and stomping with you at the Savoy. What joy, a perfect holiday, Savoy, where we can dance and sway, Savoy, under the break of day with you. How my heart is swimming while the hand is playing, never tired of romping and stomping with you at the Savoy. What joy, a perfect holiday, Savoy, where we can dance and sway, Savoy, under the break of day with you.